It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy, Renee, Alex are here. We've got lots to talk about. Apple had a great quarter. Well, how good was it? What were the highlights and the lowlights? We've got graphs, thanks to Jason Snell. We'll also talk about the new book about Apple. It turns out Renee's read it cover to cover twice. He says it's a great book, but there are some flaws. All that coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 816, recorded Tuesday, May 3rd, 2022. Sleeping in. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Certain people make my life easier by helping me out. And ZipRecruiter makes hiring easier because they do the work for you. How? ZipRecruiter's technology finds great candidates, and you can invite them to apply. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak to try it for free. And by Buck Mason. Buck Mason's clothes are second to none. Once you try Buck Mason, they'll become your go-tos, too. Head over to BuckMason.com/MacBreak and get a free T-shirt with your first order. And by CashFly. CashFly is giving away a complimentary detailed analysis of your current CDN bill and usage trends. See if you're overpaying 20% or more. Learn more at twit.cashfly.com. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple. Renee Ritchie, youtube.com/Renee Ritchie. A good day, sir.
Oh, and a good day to you, too.
Thank you, sir. Also with us from officehours.global, Mr. Alex Lindsay. Hello, Alex.
Hello.
Andy is not online right now, but when he gets in here, we will put him on. But it's just the three of us. In the meanwhile, I hope you don't mind.
Are you going to channel Andy for us, Leo?
I can channel Andy. I will channel Andy as much as I can.
We're expecting opera.
I don't have the sideburns.
Virtual sideburn. Yeah, you need the chops.
I'll do the chops for Donna Damaro. where to begin? PayPal helped spur the EU antitrust complaint, which was just filed against Apple Payments. We hear this over and over again with these EU complaints. It's usually a competitor that goes to the EU and says, hey, that's not fair.
Apple's being mean to us.
European regulators hit Apple. This is from Bloomberg, Mark Gurman, Gillian Deutsch, with a so-called statement of objections yesterday, saying that Apple abuses control over mobile payments. In particular, it's the Apple Pay service Tap to Pay abilities, and the fact that they don't let PayPal use it or somebody else use it.
The NFC chip, basically, they control the NFC system and only they can use it.
Which has always bothered me a little bit. NFC is open on Android. What other platforms are there? On Android. In fact, when Apple first put the NFC in, it wasn't used at all, right? I mean, it was just barely used.
So Apple doesn't ship chipsets normally. Like, they were experimenting with NFC. Like, I remember back in the Scott Forstall days, they did like 3 or 4 years. If we have an NFC chip, are we going to put it in? Like, there's no reason for it. And then they only put it in as an implementation detail for Apple Pay because they care about features. But then a bunch of other people are like, but we can do neat stuff with it. And they're like, yes, but it's also dangerous. That's why people put their, you know, their RFIDs into envelopes so that people can't scan them. And it's a typical thing where, like, Apple wants control and they'll say it's for security, but it also has financial benefits for them. But the fines in this one, these are not your Deutsche, like Netherlands dating app fines, Leo. This is like, what is it, 10% of
revenue.
Global profits?
Global revenue.
Yeah.
Yeah, not profits, revenue.
Revenue.
So this is the Tap to Pay, not Apple Pay. In fact,
yes.
Apple says that they're going to begin letting third parties use the NFC chip to accept payments. But in other words, small businesses could use the NFC to accept a payment, Tap to Pay. But they won't allow rival services to make payments that way.
Yeah, that still goes through Apple Pay. That's just an extension of Apple Pay and Apple Cash. That's almost like a competitor. And what people want is, it's actually not outrageous. Like, they want access to the NFC hardware. They're not saying you have to open Apple Pay, you have to let other people use the Apple Pay.
It's like, no, but you have to let
other companies. Yeah, yeah. Like, let Samsung make Samsung Pay. Like, Google
Square's
make Google
Cash Pay. App can't use it. Samsung can't use it. Google Pay can't use it. Apple says, Apple Pay rivals like PayPal are still popular. Even without the Tap to Pay
experience.
It also said that Apple Pay already supports 2,500 banks in Europe However, it will, quote, continue to engage with the commission to ensure European consumers have access to the payment options of their choice in a safe and secure environment. It's blatantly anti-competitive. I don't think safety is I mean, you're going to use safety, but I don't think safety is at risk.
Yeah, I don't know enough about it. Like it does feel like from the surface, it's just a matter of getting market share and profit. Yeah. Like it doesn't feel like obviously I'm not always that way about what Apple's doing, but in this one, I kind of go,
they say, we built this platform.
Know.
We're going to use this platform. You build your platform.
It's ours.
It's ours. You build your platform. You want to do that.
I mean, I think that at some point I think Apple will just drag it out as long as they can, because at some point there's a certain level of mass that they have within the ecosystem that it won't really matter. I mean, I hate PayPal. Like, I just will say, like,
yeah, I mean,
it.
I don't mind not using PayPal, but yeah.
Like, so the thing is that I hate using PayPal. And so I think that I don't think PayPal is going to get that much of an uptick. I think that even if they got Tap to Pay, it would probably be some small percentage of the users. I think what Apple wants to do is get as far out ahead as, you know, once you start using Apple Pay, the problem is that it's so seamless and so easy to use.
Well,
the chances of using something else.
Use. That's my problem. I see I can pay for something online with Apple Pay.
you don't want to get
your finger is just itching.
I
right?
hear
you're,
that Apple
like your finger's moving.
It. Yeah.
Your finger is just moving over there.
To be clear, this is not me tapping this on a Square cash. I do use Apple Pay all the time on Square's cash register, point of sale stuff. This is somebody coming up to me with their iPhone and paying me on my iPhone.
It's you using a Square app instead of Apple Pay to make the transaction. Because right now you have to use Apple's whole thing. And like this is like a huge battle, and it's not unique to Apple. We have this tension between dumb pipe hardware and controlling services. And it's the same battle that the carriers go through. They don't want to be dumb pipe internet services. They want you to have to use everything that they do. They have better lobbyists, so they never get attacked by any government ever at any time. But the tech companies aren't that smart. So they make all this hardware, and then they want to reap the benefits of it. But meanwhile, they want to be a platform and reap the benefits of that too, and they get squashed right in the middle.
Right.
But so I think
go ahead.
I think that eventually Apple will lose this fight, but they'll drag it out maybe for a year or two, and then by then they will not have to worry about it. I mean, I think that
fines are
the change in usage of for PayPal will. I mean, a lot of people use PayPal, and they will continue to use PayPal and PayPal. But I bet you this will not have more than a 5% impact on there, because I just don't think that many people on the Apple platform will change. I will say that it is a pain. Someone sent something to me and I got to send the money. And without Apple Pay, I don't, like in Europe,
a lot of people in Europe don't have credit cards. Like PayPal is hugely important to people in Europe because they don't use credit cards the way we do. I think we were growing up. I always thought they did, because we saw like Master of the Possibilities, Visa accepted everywhere in the world. Turns out they don't use it. And they always say, like, if there's no PayPal option, literally can't sign up for your thing. So it's a huge problem. And my guess is that these fines are so aggressive. They're $40 billion or something that Apple is going to have to roll out an API. And what they're going to do is make an entitlement, because they don't want anybody to be able to use this, because then there will be a bunch of scam apps that try to download.
That's a fair solution.
Right.
So you have to get through the App Store, which you would anyway, and you have to request the entitlement to use Tap to Pay. Apple approves it. Yeah, that seems like a sensible solution. So I'm unclear on what a statement of objections means. It sounds like this has been something that's been going on, a probe that's been going on for about 2 years. So this moves that forward. And if confirmed, according to Bloomberg, I don't know what that means. Confirmed by whom? I don't know. The company,
the lords and ladies of Europe.
The lords and ladies of Europe. The company could face hefty fines under EU antitrust rules. And those are the 10% of revenues that we're talking about. All right. Well, we'll watch with interest. I think
with
Apple.
Great interest.
Apple's going to do something, obviously, about that.
It's interesting how international companies have to be so mega regionalized now. Like in the beginning, it was just Google and Apple were completely, everything was the same everywhere. And now all these jurisdictions are creating new laws and different requirements and different lawsuits and regulations. And it's going to be interesting to see how they balance all of that.
Yeah, my initial reaction is to feel bad for them. Like, well, it's really hard to be a business these days. You got to consider all these different jurisdictions. But on the other hand,
$3 trillion.
Yeah. On the other hand, there's a lot of reasons to go for it. After all, if they didn't want to, they could just say, "Well, we're a U.S. only, operation."
But I think that it will be interesting to see if Apple goes down the path, as the EU keeps on doing the things that it does, whether Apple will go down the path of just having an EU build for the OS that is different, that doesn't necessarily work. Yeah. Doesn't necessarily work anywhere else.
Not it's hard, just like, or, not impossible to do. Samsung does that. In fact, Samsung has different phones for many
Exynos,
reasons.
Exynos, right? And Qualcomm.
They have different, not only different processors, they have different builds. Yeah, there's a whole.
So are you saying a Netherlands dating iPhone will be a reality, Alex? Is that what
you're saying? Yeah, exactly.
If you want to date in the Netherlands.
It's going to be red, like the red district.
You must use the orange phone. Yeah.
The red phone.
Or a red-orange phone.
That's what they should do. They should sell it in Europe and have its own OS and its own hardware, but it'll be some horrible color, like lime green. It'll be like lime green, and it'll just like, here's what you get to buy. Otherwise, you can order
it from the US. Like leisure suit collars.
Yeah, exactly.
Today's statement of objections, this is the quote from the EU, takes issue only with the access to NFC input by third-party developers of mobile wallets for payments in stores. I get it. So when I go into the store and pay, I have to use Apple Pay. I can use it on Square, but I have to use Apple Pay to pay.
Right.
So, and they say 8,500 banks, but maybe that's, as it is in the U.S., through Apple Pay, because my bank
is 2,500. I think it's 2,500
whatever it is.
Banks,
it's still, I don't think there are that many banks in the world.
We only have five banks in Canada, but you guys have five banks per city.
Yeah. So, but that's still through Apple Pay. So what Square or PayPal would like is for you, I can see that's a little more complicated, so that when you do the tap to pay, so I just double press my watch and Apple Pay pops up. Although I could do a different credit card.
Yes, but they want you to launch the Square app and then have a little tap to pay thing pop up there too.
Oh, forget it. Okay, if that's what they're talking about, that's not. Just have a PayPal credit card, which they do. Then I can slide over to the PayPal credit card. That's all.
Everyone wants to own the experience and the data. See, like Apple also has incredible privacy rules around. One of the things that rankles them is that Apple has incredible privacy rules, hides all the transaction data. They get almost nothing from the purchase, and that's all incredibly valuable to them.
So I misunderstood this. I'm now going to come down to a complete other side of this. I mean, when you have a Google phone and you activate Google Pay, you can't activate somebody else's pay, including Apple Pay.
Well, they want you to, they want to force you to open their app and then do it. But the thing is that Apple may give them access to the NFC and they can open their app, but that doesn't mean that when I roll up to it, that'll be the next thing that they ask for is that, hey, we want equal access. This is where these big companies, and remember, this is a rich person's game.
Yes.
These are all big companies that
it's
are all making
Leo's
lots of money.
Credit card that they're talking about here.
They are billion-dollar companies wanting to make more billions off of Apple's back. Right. They're not the little guy, trying to get ahead.
Right.
And they're doing all of these requests at the cost of the user experience.
That's right.
So everything that all these things, whether it's Epic or PayPal, or everything, all of them want to do something that is not good for the user because they don't care about us. Apple only, and I'm not saying that Apple cares about us, but Apple's business model is to make it simple for us and to make it easy for us to use. That's their business model. That's how they make profit. So I prefer that business model as opposed to using up all of our data, making it complicated for us to use, that kind of thing.
The tool PayPal's probably going for is Venmo. So right now, if I wanted to pay with Venmo, I'd either need a Venmo credit card attached to my Apple Wallet. I can't, essentially. There's no way to...
You can't tap to pay with anybody
else. I can't tap to pay with Venmo.
Right.
I could do it with a credit card, but not with another wallet. So I see where the problem is. By the way, PayPal owns Venmo, so it's probably... I'm imagining it's Venmo that they're actually more worried about than anything else. Or, for Square, the Cash app, the Cash.me app.
Or like Google Wallet and Microsoft Wallet. Everyone wants their wallet.
Yeah.
And again, I think the timing is important to them because... if Apple's able to hold out for, let's say, another year or two, they will. I mean, there's still a lot of banks in Europe that don't support Apple Pay. But once that finishes and people get used to it and they get into a pattern, it's going to be problematic for them. Because
Apple owns the wallet. Yeah. But Samsung owns the wallet on a Samsung phone. Mm-hmm. And although Samsung will let you use Google Pay, I think.
They'll let you. I think on Android they can use the NFC, chip.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. All right, so now that I understand exactly what they're complaining about, I'm a little less...
But your open access versus your data privacy, you always fight with each other, right, Leo?
Yeah.
Like, there's like a different...
If I'm using an iPhone, I think you're right, Alex. The consumer just says, I'm using the iPhone. It's the Apple Wallet. That's what I'm using.
And again, we bought into this. Like, you don't see a lot of consumers complaining about this or wishing it was some other way. You know, these are a bunch of other kings. They're kings of England that want part of France.
Right.
You know, like, this is all of these companies.
Yeah, yeah.
All of these companies having all these complaints, whether it's Spotify or all these. They're the king of England. And they would like to have part of France.
Yeah.
Like, there's that philosophical debate still. Like, because some people truly believe that choice means having a choice of everything on every platform. And other people believe that choice means having a choice of platforms. And some people really just want Apple. And they like the idea that nothing ever can happen on it. And if they want something else, they'll go to Android. And other people are like, no, but I like Apple hardware. So please give me the Android experience on Apple. And that's a huge argument.
The issue is that we will, if you increase the choice the way people are asking for it, the user will lose choice. You know, Disney and Netflix and other folks will start putting their apps only on outside of the App Store. They'll only put it out there. So we as users lose choice when that is there. And I think that the consumer should be the primary thing for the governments to protect, not the King of England. Yeah. Or the king of whatever. Yeah. Like, we don't, who cares? You know, like, they have to figure out their business model. They're big kids.
That's the big debate. And that's how our antitrust laws changed in the Reagan era. It became consumer focused as opposed to protecting competition. And I think there's a good case to protect competition, to allow other innovators to come along. That benefits consumers in the long run. You don't have to just, in fact, I think it's wrong to just look at consumer harm, but that's a big, long debate over antitrust, and we won't get into that for the moment. But I think there are. I understand that.
Not without Andy, we'd be cheating on him.
I don't want to cheat on Andy. Now, this one is for you, Renee. I think researchers find flaw in Apple silicon chips, but say it's not that bad.
I mean, that's what a lot of this stuff ultimately ends up being.
It ain't that bad. Yeah, even despite the hair on fire of Meltdown and Spectre with the Intel chips. Yep. As far as I know, it was never exploited in the wild. It was a very hard thing to exploit. And in fact, a lot of the mitigations just slowed your machine down.
Yes.
And for most people, if you're not running a server anyway, you don't have to worry about Meltdown and Spectre. These are kind of on the order of that. There's a flaw in the data memory dependent prefetcher. You got to watch out. Those prefetchers will catch you every time.
Yeah. A lot, though.
DMPs, which decide which memory content to prefetch. This is kind of like speculative execution.
Yes.
Are well known in academic circles, but yet to be deployed in a commercial product. So these researchers tweeted, this is from David Kohlbrenner, and he is with his assistant professor at UWCSE, and he's a hardware security person. We found a way, so I guess it's a university. Found this a way to leak data on Apple Silicon that is at rest. That is data the core never reads speculatively or non-speculatively. Okay, whatever. Prefetchers.info, if you want to realize or read more about this. At a high level, we found that Apple processors have a DMP, which is cool. That's not something normally see that. We found this DMP prefetches an array of pointers dereferencing pattern. Okay, we found that you can use this prefetcher to leak data pointers that are never read by an instruction, any instruction, even speculatively. And you ain't never going to have to worry about this in your lifetime, probably. It affects the A14, M1, and M1 Max, some older A-series processors, and the newer M1 Pro chips are also effective, but they've only confirmed this on the M1 Max. How bad is this? Really, right now, not that bad. We have not demonstrated any end-to-end exploits with augury techniques at this time. Currently, only pointers can be leaked, and likely only in the sandbox threat model. If you are counting on ASLR in a sandbox, I'd be worried. Otherwise, be worried when the next round of attacks using augury come out. That's always, by the way, and I've learned this from listening to Steve Gibson for 15 years. Yeah. The first exploit may not be dangerous, but it's cause for concern because what happens is people then start working on that to do something else.
Yeah, they chain them.
Or you know, you find out, well, if I can get that pointer, I might be able to use that pointer in some other way. And yeah, it can get worse. So I realize this is super technical. I think the most interesting thing.
It's nerdy interesting.
The thing that's interesting is that they're using a DMP. which which we did not know, and I think a data memory dependent prefetcher. That's a pretty cool technique, and like with and as with a lot of speculative execution techniques, there's potential problems, much like Spectre and Meltdown.
Yeah. And silicon is unforgiving, and no amount of internal QA will ever be the same as a million people hitting your hardware or right. You know, like a bunch of research engineers. So I mean, hopefully they'll learn from this, and it's always going to happen, though. Like, there's always going to be a group of people who find interesting things. Some of them become bad for us. Some of them become learning instruments for the vendor, and they make improvements over time.
Yeah.
I just find it fascinating from a silicon point of view.
The team actually is UW, which I guess is University of Wisconsin, UIUC, and Tel Aviv University. They didn't provide their... They just give you the acronyms, so I don't know. University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign is UIUC. That's, of course, where the Netscape browser came out of. UW is University of Washington. Okay, sorry about that. cs.washington.edu. And... I love it. A little credit to Anand Tech. The researcher said, we began looking at the M1 and A14 after reading this Anand Tech article, including the quote, in our yeah, I got to do this in a more nerdy voice. In our microarchitectural investigations, we've seen signs of memory magic on Apple's designs by the height of the flavin, where we might believe they're using some sort of pointer chase prefetching mechanism. And being big brains at UW and UIUC and Tel Aviv, they said, wow, maybe we could use this.
The only bad thing is that Inantech is so smart, almost every single one of them has gone to work for a vendor now.
I know. So they're all at Intel.
Almost nobody left. I think Ryan is the only one. No, almost none of them were at Intel. Almost none were at Apple.
Apple? They went to Apple?
Qualcomm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, Qualcomm. As far as we know, Apple is not patching anything. We've discussed this issue with Apple, and they're aware of all details. I'm going to guess that just as with Spectre and Meltdown, a patch is going to remove something that really speeds up the chip.
Yeah.
And unless you see it as a real threat, you're probably not going to want to patch. Or at least patch.
Keep your eyes on it.
Carefully. Yeah. Yeah. We'll keep our eyes on it. Let's take a break. You have a new book. I want to ask you all about it, by Trip Mickle of the New York Times.
It's not my book, yes. It's Trip's book.
Yes, Trip's book. But you've read it.
Yes,
We've only been able to read excerpts from it, but the excerpts are fascinating.
Yeah.
We're going to try to get Trip in for a special to do a triangulation. And if you want to join me, since you've read the book, I would encourage you to do so.
Of course.
We'll let you know when that is going to be. But let's take a little break and come back, because you've read the book, and there is quite a bit in there, including some interesting stuff about Johnny Ive and why he left. But first, a word. Oh, look at that. You left the transition in just for me. That was augury. Now that's augury. First, a word from ZipRecruiter. If somebody great has left your company, somebody like Johnny Ive, and you need to replace them, you need ZipRecruiter. Some people just make life so much easier. You don't know what you'd do without them. Your chief designer. Maybe your partner, your friend, your personal assistant. If you need to grow your business, ZipRecruiter makes hiring so much easier because they do the work for you. And now you could try it free at ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. Why is ZipRecruiter so great? Well, first of all, you're going to post that posting on ZipRecruiter. It goes out to 100-plus job boards and social networks, so you cast the widest net. Their tools make it really easy for you. Applications don't come into your inbox. They don't call your phone. They all go into the ZipRecruiter interface, which makes it very easy to reformat resumes, for instance, to scan through all the possible hires. You can even have questions to screen out people who just don't qualify. Yes, no, true, false, essay. And it makes it easy to hire the right person fast. But there's another thing ZipRecruiter does that's so cool. They actually find candidates for your job. They work on your behalf by going through all the resumes they have and saying, these people have the qualifications. Take a look at those people. Invite your top choices to apply. And I can tell you from experience, when you invite somebody to apply for a job, when you send them a note saying, hey, you know what, you'd be great for this job, are you interested? They're much more likely to apply, much more likely to follow through, much more likely to take the job. So this really works. No wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. In our experience, it's often within the first hour. ZipRecruiter is now rated the number one hiring site based on G2 ratings as of January 1st of this year. Congratulations, ZipRecruiter. The hardest thing you'll face today is not hiring. It's just remembering that special URL, ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. Try it for free. ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. It's the smartest way to hire, and it works for us. We've used it many times. Thank you, ZipRecruiter. And by the way, Tim, if you're looking for a new design lead, ZipRecruiter. all right. So the book, Trip Mickle writes for the New York Times. He's written for many different places, as I remember, right?
Yeah. He was a Wall Street Journal for a long
time. He covers Apple. He covers Google. He was the longtime journal reporter on Apple before the alcohol and tobacco.
Yes.
Good reporter. He has a new book. Show us the book. What's it called?
After Steve, How Apple Became a Trillion-Dollar Company But Lost Its Soul.
Oh.
That's like the YouTube title, though.
Yeah, that gives you some idea of where they're going in there. All I've read is the excerpt the Times published, Why Johnny Ive Left Apple.
Yes.
Tell us about that. He was not happy, it turns out. It wasn't mutually amicable.
I have to preface this by saying that the issue I have with a lot of mainstream publications when it comes to Apple is exactly like, this is why I was trepidatious that Tripp was writing it. He's a fabulous reporter, excellent writer. But the journal will do something like take a tobacco reporter, throw him on the Apple beat and say, go cover them.
Right.
And Apple's like, it's like the same problem with Lego and IKEA. They're just not normal companies. And they end up getting covered by the journal and by a bunch of other publications like their IBM. You know, like there's no understanding of Apple there. So the narrative is always wrong. It's like the facts are correct, but, and this is how IBM would act under that situation, but it's not at all the way Apple.
That's an interesting premise, though. Do you really think Apple is that different from any other company? How?
Yeah. I think the way that they were structured from Steve and the way that Tim has continued to implement things is they don't make the same kinds of decisions for the same kinds of reasons. They're also much more like I know this sounds ridiculous, but they're very see what you see is what you get. Like Tim is very, very Tim. And a lot of companies aren't. They're very bureaucratic and they're very hidden and they have all these different shareholder things that they're like.
You agendas. Don't want to interview CEOs because they have talking points and they never deviate and they're really not honest. Really, frankly.
And Apple thinks long term. Like a lot of companies also, especially in our generation, are very immediately focused, where Apple does have a history of doing a lot of very long game things, like things that don't make sense in the short term, but really do pay off. Like there's a lot of ways they could extract a lot more money, right? They could put t-shirts up on Apple.com. They sell billions of dollars worth of t-shirts on Apple.com, but they just don't do it. And that's very different than the way a lot of other businesses are, like IKEA and like Lego. I mean, they're outlier businesses.
Okay. So do you feel like Tripp does not understand that?
I think in his reporting, I always felt that. Like he always had a good amount of facts, but I didn't think he came to the right conclusion. I don't think that we can get into whether there are narratives that the Wall Street Journal and the Times editors impose on this stuff. That's probably an element of it. But I think he did get a really good understanding of Apple. Maybe not all the people involved, but I think he does. He comes off understanding Apple way better in this book, and I think it's much to his credit that all these interviews gave him all that insight. Some of the stories he tells, I know some of the people involved, and they didn't happen exactly the way that they happened in the book. So I think the people who were inclined to talk to him are the people who weren't that happy with Tim Cook or Johnny Ive.
Right.
And that might explain why some of the, like, why it's like, yeah, this happened, but that's not the vibe, you know, at all that happened. It's like, because like, you know, like any business, you've got to make choices, you've got to make compromises, you've got to make trade-offs. And the people who don't get their way are generally upset. And I get a lot of the vibe from like the upset people got to talk a lot for this book.
He says 200 interviews with current and former Apple employees and advisors, a compendious review of public sources. Neither Ive nor Cook agreed to speak to the author for attribution. That's interesting for attribution. But the story that's told in the excerpt in the Times is that Johnny Ive was increasingly unhappy with the after Steve died, with a bureaucratic nature. He said the accountants are running the show, and became more and more disengaged to the point where at one point all of the designers were gathered together to show him new designs for the iPhone. He arrived 3 hours late without apology, looked at them, made some notes, and then wandered off and never made any choices.
At the battery. Yeah.
Yeah, I think right. Like the whole overall motif of the book is that Tim Cook is like an absentee father for Johnny, where Steve was like always there for him, always visiting him, always editing things, giving feedback. And Tim did not want to be Steve, knew he couldn't be Steve, and so left Johnny almost entirely alone, which is what he did with most of the executives. He trusted them to run their business, and Johnny didn't have anybody like Steve to work with after having somebody like that. And at the same time, Tim didn't have Steve, so in their attempts to scale the company, Johnny, I guess, feels sort of quasi-abandoned, and Tim feels like, okay, you want to make a gold, like, Johnny's excesses weren't curtailed, so all Tim sees is, like, gold watches, massive tents, cars that have, like, living rooms and no steering wheels, and he feels like some order needs to be imposed on this, and then Johnny feels like he's not being protected and nurtured the way he was under Steve, even though Steve was very good at pruning him, so you have, like, just, like, there was a missing ingredient, and how could there not be, because Steve was gone.
Well, and I think, you know, Johnny Ive wasn't 100% successful either. I mean, I by the way, I totally agree with the living room without a steering wheel. I think that is the future. But just to put on the record. But
he wanted to ship it in 2019, Alex.
Oh, yeah. I would have bought one in 2019. Anyway, so what I would say is, you know, the keys on the laptop didn't turn out too well. There was a whole bunch of things that were becoming form over function. You know, all the way down to, you know, there's rumors that the, you know, they had to put dots on the glass, you know, on
because the
rumor was those were Johnny Ive's tears.
So anyways, people kept hitting into the glass and they would have to
they kept on running into the glass.
You're talking about the curved windows at the Apple campus.
The doors. People just walk into them all the time. And so they had to put little dots across them to cover them up.
Because he wanted completely clear glass. Yeah.
Yeah, and so the thing is that I think that those are the I think he wasn't knocking it out of the park. I mean, there was definitely things that were having, you know, how it looks become more important than how it actually operates. And a lot of us were getting upset with, I mean, I stopped buying the laptops.
Yeah.
I'm a pretty ardent Apple user, and for me to say I'm going to stick with my 2016 laptop is a thing.
That's not, you know, covered, like, in the book, which I thought was a big surprise. They don't cover the Mac, the keyboard, any of that. The watch is covered a lot, some of the other stuff, the car,
is
but not the
Mac. Is this really
at all.
A book about Johnny Ive? It sounds like, more than Apple.
It alternates. So it's almost like, you know how Game of Thrones had point of view characters? You have like the Tim Cook point of view chapters and then the Johnny Ive point of view chapters, and some chapters cross in between like a Star Wars movie finale when you're going from group to group, seeing how the different people are reacting.
Yeah. Clay Shirky reviews it for the New York Times and says, in the epilogue, Mickle drops his reporter's detachment to apportion responsibility for the firm's failure to launch another transformative product. Cook is blamed for being aloof and unknowable, a bad partner for Ive, quote, an artist who wanted to bring empathy to every product, end quote. Ive is also dinged for taking on, quote, responsibility for software design and the management burdens that he soon came to disdain, end quote. By the end, the sense that the two missed a chance to create a worthy successor to the iPhone is palpable, and Shirky says it's also hooey. And the best evidence of this is the previous 400 pages. It's true that after Jobs died, Apple didn't produce another device as important as the iPhone, but Apple didn't produce another device that important before he died either. So,
and nobody else has.
And nobody else has. The iPhone is such an outlier that anytime you compare anything to the iPhone, you're going to lose.
Well, and I do
but
think
Apple
that
Watch and AirPods business is big. Sorry, Alex.
Yeah, I know, and I agree, and I think that I do think that eventually, someday in the future, we'll probably have an Apple Car, and we'll have, you know, and then you have the whatever the glasses are going to be, you know, whatever that turns out to be, and those will be slow cookers like the way we see the watch. I don't think they're going to be replacement for the iPhone, but I think that we're going to start seeing that pie chart where the iPhone is half. Continue to decrease, and that is may not be revolutionary, but it is super powerful as a company to be able to keep on maintaining your revenue and then continuing to diversify it into very different markets is something that very few companies do well. you know, and maybe Apple won't do it well either. But I think that we're on a trajectory of 3 to 5 years from now, nothing being more than 30% of the revenue, you know, and that's, that puts them in a much different place, especially when they, when you start talking about antitrust and you talk about other things, they're like, well, we might lose a little bit of something on the iPhone, but we've got all these other things to, you know, that are doing well, you know? So I think it's a, what I will say is that Cook has brought, I think he has taken some of the excitement out of it, but he's brought a level of management, you know, that is why Apple keeps growing. You know, like it's...
And it's our under Disney.
I think it felt to me, and again, I haven't read the book. I look forward to it. It felt to me that Ive was singularly happy under Steve Jobs and didn't like Tim Cook's style. Well, that happens all the time. They're very different stylistically. Tim Cook
They both miss Steve enormously.
Yeah.
Both Tim and
But
Johnny.
Tim has made Apple... even more successful, to be honest.
Like so, Steve was so decisive, and he was normally like, he'd make big blunders too. Like, and Johnny said that he had like big dopey ideas sometimes, but he was really good at like, you'd present him something, he'd say use that one, and he was mostly right. And Johnny couldn't do that on his own, and Tim was like waiting for people to do that on their own, and that led to a lot of tension. He does cover Apple's rise to services though, especially how Tim Cook managed to get Wall Street off his back by going all in on services. Now that ramped up the price to earning ratio considerably because Wall Street appreciates services business. And to Alex's point, that's now such a huge contributor towards Apple's bottom line.
Well, and also the fact that, you know, I don't think Steve ever, I don't think they never, ever did a dividend, you know, any kind of stock buyback or,
no, didn't
you know,
believe
I
it.
Think Steve like really felt like you were lucky to be on the train with him. Like, you know, like yeah. you can, you know,
you're not going to get
charity, exactly. philanthropy, yeah. any of that. He didn't
yeah,
believe
all
in.
That stuff was, yeah. I so he just believed it, his job was to do
it
that.
It looks to me like, and again, I haven't read the book, so you correct me if I'm wrong, that there's a lot of great information in this book that where Mickle yeah. might have gone wrong is trying to build a narrative around what is essentially kind of a random walk with different people bouncing off of each other. And you know, why hasn't Apple had another iPhone? Well, you know, I mean, that's it's hard to say well, this is and, why. So and, he's and
just
trying
a
to
little
make
two
a narrative.
Dimensional.
He's trying to make
it, yeah,
a narrative out of it that isn't doesn't really fit the facts. Well, just but the
it's
facts
just
are
a bit
good,
2D.
Right? Yeah, it's 2D.
Yeah, I mean, the stories are really good, but it's very 2D. Yeah, it's 2D. Well, it depends on how much you know Apple. Like, if you don't know Apple at all, you'd be like, oh my God, I can't believe all this is happening. It's such drama. This would be a soap opera. I can't, like, this is what was going on. But when you know Apple, it's like, yes, but, you know, if you had to do all that stuff, that was really hard to do.
We had the same complaints about Isaacson's books, about his biography of Steve Jobs, that it was fine if you were not, you know, as we are, you know, yeah. buried in Apple trivia. But the people who really had been following this all along felt like it was a little bit of an outsider's perspective.
There's a great story. One great story where he's like so angry. Johnny Ive is so angry that he makes these beautiful super ellipses where the curves are so gradual. And Scott Forstall keeps planting these ridiculous round wrecks with just like curved corners on the phone. And they don't match. And it makes him crazier and crazier. And finally, he gets rid of Scott and takes over. But then he's like, I didn't want to take over. I just wanted to fix those rectangles.
Yeah.
I just wanted to go in there and say, do this. But I didn't want to have to manage them all.
It's pretty clear. Clear that Tim or Johnny did not really relish this role that he was put into of managing.
Yeah,
wanted
the
this.
Power, but not the management.
Wanted the power, but not the job.
And to get back, to, I mean, this is the challenge with any book that's written is that if you're writing from the outside, and this is every piece of press that we watch. Every you know when you're dealing with people who are this is one story for this week and another story for next week.
Right,
they're inherently going to be inaccurate and inherently miss the thread because they don't know it that well. They don't, you know, and that's, you know, anytime someone reports about anything that I'm working on, people report, I quietly work on a lot of things and people report on a lot of things that I work on. And it's, I find it humorous to watch their version of what I worked on because it's not.
It's always true.
Very, it's always true. And so in his defense.
When you read a story in the newspaper about something you intimately know, it never.
Yeah, you're just decides. Like, wow.
It's that amnesia, right? I forget what it's called. Something mall amnesia, where you read the article that you know, and then you think it's all wrong, and you read an article of something you don't know, and you just assume it's all right.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. Well, that's life. I mean, you know.
Yep.
Trip. I don't know anything about Trip's job either. Right.
Right. Exactly.
So that's the way it is. We all are trying to see the world. We see it through our point of view, but trying to see it through others' point of view is always
Gelman perfect. Amnesia. That's what
Gelman
it's called.
Amnesia. That's right.
Yeah.
Murray Gelman. All right. So it's worth reading, though. It's a good book.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I think it's fun.
Like a lot. Again, it's not perfect, but like a lot of stuff you would just never know otherwise.
Right. It's fun for us Apple watchers because we, you know, we've been watching these events unfold in real time to see a roll up with details that we didn't know about. And yeah, that's always fun. I read every book I can about Apple. So tell me some other things that have not been published in the New York Times that you learned.
One thing that was really interesting is they talk about, like, they're working on the Apple Watch. Johnny has this idea. He wants it to be fashion-based. Nobody else wants it to be fashion-based, but Tim is, like, deferring to Johnny. And the people they bring in to run it's like, it's not ready yet, but they feel this immense pressure because people are like, you haven't had a hit since Steve Jobs. You're not, like, a worthy successor. So they get it all ready to go out, and then it's out, and they don't know what it does yet. Like, it has, like, 8 different functions, and there's no focus on it. And so people are like, you put it out too early. It's not good enough yet. And then they're like, we should pivot to fitness. And Johnny's like, no. Oh, it's fashion. And so that whole thing is.
And actually, after Johnny left, Tim did pivot to fitness, and it was the right thing to do. Although, thank you, Johnny, for interchangeable watch bands.
Yes. Yeah. Him and Mark News. Yeah. That whole collaboration was amazing. And it does give you a good sense of, like, talking to Johnny and the reverence that he has for objects. Like, he keeps them in these little things and like unpackages them and picks them up ever so carefully and really, like, and he believed ideas were fragile. Like, one of his issues with Scott Forstall was, like, he'd have an idea and Scott would say no because blah 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 blah, and Johnny was protected from all of that with Steve. Steve would never let that happen. It's the only one who talked to Johnny, and he would say maybe, like, they had a very good way of talking to each other, and he would calm down Steve too. And when that was gone, he just felt it was a lot of negativity, and he felt like negativity killed ideas. It didn't give them any room to nurture or grow.
Yeah, I mean, the solid gold Apple Watch must have been a Johnny Ive idea, right?
Yeah, he wanted to play with more materials.
And not a good idea.
Well, was that? I always thought that was more of a Burberry kind of approach to things. You know, with Angela Ahrens, it felt like, I didn't know.
Came after that, though, didn't she?
But she, yeah. I thought she was.
No, she came after. But
no, they got her.
It was a continuation of that whole Apple is a fashion brand.
Yes, Johnny wanted to make Apple into fashion. He thought that was very lucrative for them.
And I has Tim completely abandoned that?
They still have the Hermes. Like, so Tim got the Nike deal, and then Johnny got the Hermes. I get yelled at no matter how I pronounce it, English, French, whatever. The Hermes deal. And that remains. So there is that fashion aspect, but everything else is gone. All the
you
Vogue
say
stuff
Hermes any way you want to say Hermes.
Okay, thank you.
I say Hermes. Isn't that right?
Yes, but people get upset if you don't roll the R or if you pronounce the
Hermes,
H.
Because it's Hermes. Hermes. Do not pronounce Hermes. The H. It's Hermes.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
All right. what else? Johnny Ive started, his first big design was that beautiful Bondi blue iMac.
Yeah, yeah.
I think Tripp got the story wrong, though, because it sounds like this. I've always heard it was Steve who said, we've got to have a handle. And it sounds like Tripp says it was Johnny's idea.
Yeah, Steve says, Johnny says, we need a handle, but no one's going to use it, but they're going to know that it's there and they're going to appreciate the care and thoughtfulness of it.
Is that?
But yeah, so a lot of the story is like, I've spoken to people who are at a lot of these things, and the stories are different. But you never, like, if you ask 3 different people, maybe you'll get 3 different memories of it as well. So it's hard to say.
Yeah. Yeah, it's.
He does have these great stories about Jeff Williams and Tim Cook driving, like, Toyota Camrys and Honda Accords for way longer, like years and years, and they're at Apple. And Tim living in a tiny apartment until Steve showed up and said, "You've got to buy a house. You're worth millions of dollars."
You're killing me, Tim. Yeah. We pay you a lot of money. What did Johnny drive?
Oh, Johnny had, like, Aston Martins and Bentleys, and then he got a driver because he didn't want to. He wanted to be able to work while he was traveling. Yeah. He lived in San Francisco. Tim lived in Palo Alto.
Oh, well, it's a lot closer to drive from Palo Alto to Cupertino than it is from San Francisco. Tripp Mickle, after Steve, how Apple became a $1 trillion company and lost its soul. I know, is it out officially? You have a galley, I think.
Yes.
I don't know.
But I think it's out now. I've seen reviews popping up, so maybe. After Steve, because of Steve.
And I have to admit that the part "and lost its soul," I kind of wrote it off.
Like, yeah, okay, me too. That was such a clickbaity headline.
Because arguably they care so much about civil liberties and charity and helping.
It's quite
people.
The opposite.
And they also if you know anybody at Apple, they care so much about their products.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there's a lot of, I mean, even if you look at the emails, there's a lot of, like, angry emails about things not working. Like, people at Apple take it personally when things aren't working. You know, it's not like I sent a thing in about Keynote. I don't know anybody at the Keynote team. I sent a thing in. By the way, the way the Kinect thing doesn't work, I don't like the way it works with the thing. I got an email right back. Hey, can you send us a movie?
No, they care.
They were like, yeah. Like, I got to figure it out. Totally and so, care. So I think that, yeah.
It came out today. Available on in hardcover, audiobook, and Kindle. And yes, there is an Audible version of it.
Totally worth, absolutely worth reading. And
Will Dameron, narrator. Maybe I'll get the audio version of it. Thank you for that.
And again, my critiques are somebody who's been immersed in this. Like, this is just one of the best. It's one of the funnest Apple books you could ever read. Way funner than a lot of the biographies.
Oh, you think so?
Okay. Yeah, it's just really well written and a lot of fun. It's like, it's not pedantic. It's not like, yeah.
I love the stories. That, to me, is always, when Andy Hertzfeld started folklore.org, I just read it back to cover to cover because I love the stories of what happened inside. And if you've been watching it, as we have for decades from the outside, when you read what was going on inside at the same time, you go, oh, that explains that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. Good. So it's a strong recommendation.
Yeah.
Excellent. Let's see. Apple's second quarter results. Let's see here.
All the money and all the warnings.
They made a lot of money, didn't they?
And a lot of warnings. Yeah. Yes.
Revenue up 9%. New March quarter record. Service revenue all-time high, as always.
Yes.
March revenue, it's kind of stunning. This is 3 months.
It's ridiculous.
$97.3 billion. That means $1 billion a day plus. Quarterly earnings per diluted share of $1.52. That's only of relevance to the stock.
Paying for all that loss
market. $28 billion in operating cash flow. Okay. That's a goodly amount of money.
Which allowed them to return $27 billion of it to the investors. Like, Apple's like, oh, we'll keep a little off the top.
Is that as a dividend? When they say return, do they mean as a dividend?
I think it's a mixture of buybacks and dividends.
Buybacks. Cash dividend, 23 cents per share. That's an increase of 5%. You'll be getting that on May 12th. So save that and you can buy yourself a Mac Studio. And a $90 billion addition to the share repurchase program. But let's break it down, because that's what really matters, is how Mac, how iPad, how iPhone did. We're going to take another little break, I know. It seems like we just took one, but I want to divide this up into logical chunks. So another little break, and when we come back, Apple's results and what it means for us as users. Because honestly, this is not a show for stock speculators.
No.
This is what it means for us as users. Of late, I've been wearing, you know, do you always, when you have a, when you go home, my mom taught me this. And I asked Lisa, she said, no, I never heard this. When I would come home from school as a kid, she'd say, okay, put away your nice clothes, put on your play clothes. You know, don't mess up your school clothes. Put on your play clothes. And so in my mind, when I get home, I take off the suit, take off the starched white shirt, and I get my Buck Masons on, my go-to clothes. They're comfortable. They're lovely. And you know what? They're good-looking enough. I probably could wear them to work. I love my Buck Masons. I hope you have a favorite, a go-to piece of clothing, a shirt that's soft and comfortable and fits you just right, that you just wear whenever you don't have to, you know, care what anybody thinks or your sweat. I have, you know, they always talk about the Knives Out sweater, the sweater. I have the sweater from Buck Mason. Actually, Lisa bought it for me. I just love it. It's like a fisherman's sweater, but it's cotton. It's beautiful. Jeans, just gorgeous stuff for men and women. My go-tos are all Buck Masons. In fact, when I was opening my Buck Masons the last time we were doing this ad, it was on This Week in Google, and Aunt Pruitt stole my I gave it to him. The sweatpants, they're not really sweatpants. I don't know how to describe them. I guess they call them sweatpants. They're so comfy. They look great. They're warm. Everything fits great out of the box. There they are right there. Look at that. And those shorts, fantastic. Buck Mason makes all the essentials, jeans, shirts, jackets, stuff that you will have in your closet that will become your go-to. Like, I can't wait to put these on. It's play clothes time. Let me put these on. let me get comfortable for exercise, for lounging around the house. I call these my coding shorts. I put those on and I write some code. The tailored look and fit of their T-shirts is second to none. They invented the curved hem tee. It is incredible. In fact, GQ calls it the best T-shirt in the game. Even after wearing them and putting them through the wash, they look just as good as when I first wore them. Actually, they wash really nicely, softer and softer. Once you try Buck Mason, they will become your go-tos as well. Head over to buckmason.com/MacBreak and get a free T-shirt with your first order. Free shipping, too. BUCKMASON, buckmason.com/MacBreak, and get a free T-shirt with your first order. Get one of those beautiful curved hem tees. They look so good. This is comfort and style. buckmason.com/MacBreak. Let me see if I can find six colors.
Some chats, some hot chat.
Some chats. Some six-color chats from Jason Snell. Total Apple revenue. It is not one of... This is Q2, so it's not their big Q1 where they make all the money on the iPhone. Holiday. Yeah, it's not the holiday sales.
But if you note that their Q2 is now bigger than only a couple of years ago for the big
Q4. It's the biggest Q2 ever.
Yeah.
The only bigger quarters are those big iPhone quarters.
But look back, you only go a couple quarters back, and this one is bigger than their biggest quarter ever.
Yeah.
Quite a growth.
It's really amazing. It's really amazing. Revenue by category. I always look to see if it's going to be less iPhone, because I think that's healthy for the company. But, of course, it's still 52%. Services now 20% of revenue. Wearables 9. Mac 11. Glad to see that. iPad 8. Actually, here's the deal. Okay, this is the, what was I looking at? What was the chart before that? Total Apple revenue.
Yeah.
And then then this is Mac revenue. Ah.
Yep.
Look at that. And they did say that half of the people who bought Macs this quarter were first-time buyers. Switchers.
Bless the M1.
That is really good for Apple, isn't it? That is really good. Yep. Holy cow. Second best Mac quarter ever after only second to last quarter.
Yep.
Revenue is up 15% year over year for the Mac. iPad revenue, though, a little bit down.
iPad sort of had like the worst of the quarter because any supply constraints got shoved off onto iPad this quarter. So any components that were shared between iPhone and iPad, for example, those went to the iPhone. So the brunt of the shortages ended up hitting the iPad.
So this down 2% year over year, not as bad as last quarter. It was down 14% year over year. So
yeah.
Last quarter was terrible. iPhone revenue, $50 billion. Did they talk on the call about iPhone sales? Because we've seen rumors that, for instance, people weren't buying, you know, that they were going to slow down on some models. And
they're great except for the Mini.
They're great except for the Mini.
Well, but yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the Mini, it's that thing was like, you know, 95% of the noise on Twitter is really represents 5% of the market. And everybody on Twitter is a designer or like an entrepreneur or like a founder, and they want a small phone. But the majority of people are gravitating towards bigger phones. So Apple tested it. It didn't perform well. So now we're going to get two bigger phones with the next one.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, drum roll, please. Andy Anatko is in the house. No, that's...
Oh, that's not.
No, there's the real deal. There's the real deal. Little tease there. Hey, Andrew, are you okay? Oh, I can't hear any audio, but other than that, I'm sure you're great. Is that us? It's not us. Andrew, unmute yourself. It's nice to see the
such a tease.
Burns, I'll tell you. Give me the burns again. That was a good one. Who did that?
I can't tell if you're Andy or Wolverine.
Anthony did that fast. not as good looking as the real Andy Anatko. Not one bit. He is struggling with his audio. Let's, Andy, just as soon as you get working, just shout. We'll continue through the iPhone charts, thanks to Jason Snell and sixcolors.com. Let's see. We left off at iPhone revenue up 5% year over year. not the biggest ever. Services, that's been linear all along. Now almost $20 billion, 20% of the revenue. And according to Trip Mickle, this was all Tim Cook's doing.
Yep. Better Wall Street narrative and good opportunity to build upon the iPhone as a user base by getting more money out of the same customers, because you start running out of customers at a certain point when you get big.
What do they call it? Revenue per user?
Yes. Average revenue per user, ARPU.
ARPU. That's how you bring... the problem, I imagine, and I think Trip Mickle wrote about this, they were facing is a saturation of the market. You can't continue to grow at that pace because pretty soon everybody who has an iPhone...
you think that, and then they keep growing. Like the best part is they were worried about you can't keep growing. The iPhone keeps growing, and they also are now growing this entire other revenue vertical. So it's interesting.
So we're still working on Andy's audio. I'm not sure what's going on. Year-over-year service revenue change up 17%. Not the biggest growth, but still 17%. Pretty good. I wouldn't turn it
down. And no new services launched. Like new services are launching for a while, which getting the boost. Yeah.
Apple One, still king of the services. And you know what? I've been slamming Apple TV. I wasn't real happy with some of the early shows. I know Ted Lasso was a big hit. I watched the morning show season 2. It was so awful. It really disappointed me. And yet, there have been some really good newer things. Slow Horses on Apple TV is stunning. They've done a really good job with the newer stuff. And I think
what's the one everybody but me has watched? It's not Servant. It's
Servant.
No, it's that other one that everyone's talking about. They went crazy for the finale just recently.
Oh, Severance. Woo!
Severance, I haven't seen it yet.
So Severance is interesting because it's kind of about work-life balance, right? It's kind of about how work has become more and more horrible. It's very much a political story, but it's not. It's a thriller, but you realize at the end, you know, this is about life. It's kind of like first there was The Office, then there was Severance. But it's a little hard at first because it's so sensually deprived. It's a weird, you'll see, but it's not a great place to be because it's work. But by the end, and I have to say the end at the worst possible time, it's just like, oh my God.
Got a huge buzz though.
If I were you, I would wait till season 2 before you watch it because you're going to go,
There's a hatch in the sequence of numbers that keep showing up, is my understanding. There's just they suddenly find a hatch in the Lost Island. And
they kind of do. They find a hatch. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I really feel like they're getting better and better. The Tom Hanks stuff, Finch wasn't so great, but Greyhound was. They've done some deals now with some of the best directors in Hollywood.
Shining Girls is getting good buzz.
Yeah, I can't wait to watch Shining Girls. Yeah.
And it's turned out to be a better model than Netflix. You know, Netflix is having more
surprise.
Like the new HBO.
It ain't about catalog. It's about original content. But the thing is, Netflix can never compete with Apple because Apple doesn't need to make money on Apple TV Plus.
Yep. Same as Spotify.
Well, I think that the other thing is that I was really trying to analyze it because I dropped Netflix. And I was trying to figure out why it didn't matter. And what happened was I lost Netflix for 3 months and I didn't notice.
Ooh.
Like, that's what happened. I changed my credit card number. And I had realized that it's been 3 months. When I look back, I was like, I haven't paid since like January or whatever. And I hadn't been watching anything, and I realized that for me, part of it was that it's so hard to keep up with these things. So the things that were keeping me coming back to Netflix were like Chef's Table. So I was waiting for the next season for that. I was waiting for the next season of a couple other documentary things. There were definitely things that I was really into. It's just that they didn't maintain them. Like, they just left them go. And I guess they decided there wasn't enough viewers. But the problem is then I was like, well, I'm not watching anything.
They also have too much stuff, So Apple TV, it was a slow start, but of course it's a new service. It takes them a while to find their voice, and it's gotten really good.
The other thing is that everybody does this. They're playing with the shelves. Like, how do we set?
Yeah.
They're constantly changing our shelves. For Netflix, I'm like, the number one thing I watch on Netflix is stand-ups. So why don't you keep a shelf there all the time?
They should know.
But I would come in, and the shelf would be gone. And now I'm like, okay, now where do I find another? Where do I find this? I don't know anymore. I don't know how to find stand-ups, And you must watch my behavior
and
go.
You think it's new, and it's not.
And here's the thing, and the thumbnail keeps changing, and they change the thumbnails, and you pop up, and you're like, oh, that's just what I already saw, you know, and it just gets really frustrating. I find like changing thumbnails really drives me absolutely crazy.
I agree that Netflix's biggest problem is bad software. Yeah. You know, they could do so much better to and you know have so much crap. There's so much stuff in there. They need to do a better job with their software.
And they have like a whole shelf for like new releases, and all of them are like a year or more
old.
Which I know. Is like false advertising.
I know. All right. Let's see. Wearables, home accessories, wearables and home and accessories up 8.8. No, I'm sorry. Revenue was 8.8 billion. The revenue change
was up
12%.
A lot of the purchases were first-time Apple Watch purchases again as well, so that's still continuing.
Yeah, I didn't read the transcript for the call, and I wasn't on the call, so if you have any color to add from the call, please do. Wearables, home, and accessories. So it's the HomePods, it's the what are accessories?
It's basically Apple Watch, AirPods, and then like the HomePod stuff. Like that's the big...
Okay.
Yeah. Ancillary things.
All right. That's a big business for them, you know. Total Apple profit. It's a profit deal. $25 billion, the largest ever in a non-Q1.
Yep.
$25 billion in 3 months. Not bad. That's up 9% year over year.
So there was a lot of celebrating, especially with the analysts. They were all congratulating them on how well they managed to manage everything going on for the last quarter. The biggest concern.
Ah, it's Andy Anatko, the basso profondo. Are you okay, Andrew?
I am okay. I'm also very well rested.
I overslept?
Yeah, believe it or not, I was in New York all week, all weekend.
I saw your pictures
back late last night.
Yeah,
and I had an alarm set like for 1:30 to make sure I was up on time. But then I forgot that my phone was making weird noises on the train home in the quiet car, so I turned down the volume for alarms and notifications to zero. So
I don't mind. You can oversleep any time. We're just
I know.
I was just worried about you, so I'm glad to know.
Thank you.
You are fine. You didn't really miss
much. Windows
Weekly
got you.
I think what really happened is Andy hypnotized himself and was unable to escape.
Actually, I was trying really hard to avoid having to talk that hour-long hunk where we talk about financials. But
You missed it. Your timing wasn't perfect. No, Andy was at the Met Gala. He was wearing his Iron Man suit at the Met Gala. And
I gave my designer because the assignment was the theme was the golden age. I said, here is unlimited budget. All I ask is that you make sure it stuffs into my usual backpack because screw baggage fees, right?
It was amazing. Everybody thought you were Jared Leto. It was incredible. It was just a mind-boggling thing. I said, no, that's Andy Anatko. Anyway, we're glad we got you.
We thought we'd punk Anna Wintour this year. Really came up well. Sorry again. Very glad to be here even for just
We'll get through these financials. Sorry. I should have started with them. And then it would have been all right. Your timing would have been impeccable. Regional revenue, and this is really about
I was just going to add that, a lot of them were congratulating Tim on how well that Apple managed the whole management of the crisis.
Yeah.
But then they also had this $4 to $8 billion that they're worried about for the next quarter, and that's really dominated a lot of the conversation. Mostly because Tim's color was that some of that they're going to recapture because they're people who really need new things and they're still going to buy them. They're just going to have to wait a little bit longer. But any impulse buys, like if people just said, "I want this, I'm going to buy this now," oh, it's not available. That they might lose, and that was just a little bit of a concern.
So there, and is it all supply chain that they're concerned about that's going to cause this?
Legacy nodes, like is chip shortages on legacy nodes. Yeah. They still seem to be okay with leading edge nodes, although it does sound like they're prioritizing iPhone at the expense of iPad for a lot of this stuff. And also the closures, like the whole Shanghai corridor has been closed, draconianly closed. And Apple is prioritized because of their ties with the Chinese government and with the local industry. There's so much of the local economy in those areas. They get prioritized, but getting parts from other places is really hard, and getting those places back up and running is really hard.
Yeah, it's tough. Let me just take a look. If you were to order a MacBook Pro 14-inch today. I just see it'll. You'd get actually you'd be able to get it in June, so that's not awful.
Yeah,
you'd be able to.
Although
get
Although it should be almost nothing by now.
Yeah,
it was announced October of last
year. Yeah, it's 7 weeks out. The 16 inch is also 7 weeks out,
and that's like loss of immediate sales for Apple. Which
yeah.
Is what, you know,
yeah.
This whole thing has been.
Let's look at the Mac Studio. I'm curious how long the delay would be for a nice.
And there was a rumor today that already ramping up for the iPhone because they're worried that there won't be enough people available to make them physically.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, seven. Well, depends on which studio you get. If you get the high end, 7 weeks out, they're actually doing pretty well on the base model. So that's,
those are made to order though. So like it's one SKU. Like there's not the same kind of pre-built SKUs. Like they can pop the right memory modules in and ship them. So that's it's not easier, but it's a much lower. It's a small batch for Apple compared to mass-produced products like MacBook Pro. Right?
Yeah. Regional revenue, a big jump for China. In fact, China's the biggest chunk China's had of Apple's revenue ever. Of course, America's nice steady growth there. Europe seems to be tailing off. Japan and the rest of Asia Pacific kind of flat. This is in billions of dollars. So China's a big. Yeah. You can see how important China is, almost as important as the EU at this point. And year over year growth, that's where you really see the spike. Why is China? Why is Apple doing so well in China? Did they say?
I don't know if they said specifically. They just said that they were, but Chinese manufacturers haven't been doing well either.
Right.
I think Apple is just so well managed, and they're in esteem. Like you get face for using Apple products.
It wasn't so long ago that Apple was saying, "Oh, headwinds in China, and you know sales are going to drop." In fact, you see these big plummets here in previous years, 2020.
Tim is
for
really
instance.
Good at managing that relationship.
Yeah, look at that.
Yeah.
So if you ever have to ask. Why does Apple give the Chinese government anything they ask?
Well, to be fair, it's a negotiation. Like Renee said, they have a lot of – if Apple decided, no, we're taking our ball and going home, they say, wait, we can talk.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's not as good as what we would like, but I as much as I keep on that point, I do acknowledge that Apple knows that it doesn't have to do exactly what they want, and oftentimes there's a negotiation behind the scenes that we never see.
Apple's self-service repair is now available.
That equipment, though, Leo.
Yeah, this it's probably a little expensive. Did they say, how much?
iFixit sends you a spatula. Apple sends you eight industrial presses.
Yeah.
There's actually a section in the diagnostics tool to prepare people that it will arrive in two heavy cases measuring like 38 inches by 18 inches, weighing 18 pounds and 38 pounds or something. It's like, are they asking us to repair these or manufacture them?
What are you getting?
You said you wanted Apple equipment.
What are you getting?
The exact stuff that the Apple store uses, Leo. It's exact. Yeah. Like they're not making anything new for anybody. You're getting exactly what they use at the Genius Bar.
And how expensive is all of this?
49 bucks to rent for 2 weeks. They will take a deposit.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. But like Renee said, it really is like all the equipment you would get in the Apple store. So instead of like the iFixit guide giving you the very practical results of just put the guitar pick inside,
right.
Put the suction cup on top. It is no, put this inside this heat bed to soften the glue. Here is the device that will center something properly. Oh my goodness. It really, I don't know whether this, I know that practically this is because Apple wasn't really set up to do this. And so they wanted to do this program, but this is the only way they felt they could do it to ensure that people would have an okay experience with the repair. But part of me is like, okay, fine. Babies, if you want to repair, fine. Here is. First of all, you'll need 240 volt outlets, so you're gonna have to unplug your washing machine and dryer to plug this equipment.
No,
in.
No, that's not true.
Secondly, a man from OSHA will come in to make sure that you're wearing steel painted shoes.
Actually, to Apple's credit, they are sending it. Shipping is free. It's $49 rental for a week. That's I think considering the cost of what this
you get money back when you send the old parts back.
I mean.
I think it's a little like, you know, at Nellis Air Force Base, you know, they take the ground crew gets, you know, they're kind of the incentive, you know, the employee of the month kind of thing gets to go up in a F-15 in the back, and I saw one take off, and they go to the end of the runway, and they just turn straight up and just go. I mean, it looks like a rocket goes up. And when they get to the top, they flip it. They spin. They do this corkscrew, and then they turn really hard. And I asked, does anyone throw up? He's like, everybody throws up, like, except for the pilot. And he goes, usually, you know, when you hear the pilot going, you know, you're in trouble because you're going to go out, you know. And as they start pulling the G's, and he said, you know, there's two things there. One is that you want to make sure you felt like you flew in an F-15. You don't want to feel like, right, well, I just went up and it was nice. So you're going to get that. And the other part is the pilots are letting you know that why they're pilots
they
and why you're not.
Are they right?
So sending these heavy gear is kind of like that. It's like, so here's what the professionals use.
Yeah.
And we don't have a kiddie version.
Yeah.
So be sure that you want to go down this path.
There is no kiddie version.
The kid wants to go to the park and you give him the car keys. That's what it sort of feels like.
All right,
but nonetheless, we have to remember that we're used to, like, as nerds, we're kind of used to, hey, look, why should I pay $X to fix this when I could buy the parts from AliExpress and do it myself for cheap? But there are a lot of people that are like, our closest Apple store is a 3-hour drive away.
Yeah,
it is not practical for us to go out to the Apple store just like I can be at an Apple store in 15 minutes. So for this still is a very, very big win.
Yeah,
it's also great. Like, if Dan Riccio's neighbor's kid is bugging him, he can just, like, repair the screen for him. Like, he doesn't have to bother with anything. But if you have, like, the kid who used to be the one who took apart the radio in the old days, you know, or took apart the record player, like, this is like, we have an old iPhone. The kid's really interested in it. We'll get them the stuff. They get a chance to look at it. And maybe they, like, I could never do this, but maybe the neighbor kid could. It's fantastic.
Yeah. I could see a neighbor kid, or, you know, someone like a 16-year-old or 17-year-old that's pretty techy, or a 12-year-old. And they just let the entire community know on Nextdoor, hey,
yes,
I have an Apple kit. I have an Apple kit that can do repairs. What do we got to do? Who's got cracks?
If you want, buy these. You don't have to rent them.
Yeah.
$115 for a battery press.
Oh, right.
There you go. The 6.7-inch heated display. Now, these are specific to the phone model, so you'd have to have one for each model. This is an iPhone 12 Pro Max. $116 for the heated display pocket. The display press, $216.
I think we should just put a croissant in there.
We should just get one of these for the studio. It looks like you can make a cup of coffee. Yeah. See if Ant says, "Oh, I like the new coffee maker."
We get croissants and we press them like waffles, and then we just have a lineup outside the studio.
And then the heated display removal fixture. This is the thing that instead, you know, as you said, iFixit sends you a couple of bolsters that you put in the microwave. Yeah. This is a little bit more high tech. Wow. But it's only $256. So
it's not that expensive.
They're not making a huge amount of money on this. This is good.
If you're a company that would like to service, like, your employees' stuff in house, or if you're just an enthusiast who is the person who, like me, I was the kid who was on Easter break. I was taking home, like, my mom would come pick me up from school. I would load up, like, 18 different computers and floppy drives from the computer lab, because I was the one who was supposed to, I was the one who, like, fixed them all, like, during break. I mean, this is your paper route money. This is what your after school money being paid for. Hey, wow, I got the cool tools that even the professionals have.
And look, when you rent it for $49, it comes in two nice Pelican cases with the pick and pull foam.
Go bag.
This is like your go bag, Alex. This is, they learned something from
it. I think that there's going to be kids that are making money on the side just fixing people's phones.
The only drawback is...
There is a restriction. Yeah.
You have to get the one for that particular model.
Yeah.
So if you... Well, there's two. You also have to put your number. So, like, when you go to do repair, like, you can read the manuals. I think they let you read the manuals right away just to make sure that you're okay to do the repair, because, like, it can be a bit intimidating.
Yeah.
But then you have to put the number for your phone in there to generate the send request. So they don't want just people ordering stuff willy-nilly. But if you get all your neighbors' codes, you can just put them all in.
And then the battery bundle itself is only $71. And then if you return the replaced part, you get credit. So it's $46, $47 after credit. That's really a great deal.
Again,
impressed.
I think that the folks that wanted the folks that were arguing for this were people who had a business to do this. And I still think that what Apple did is gave them more than what they asked for, which is what they wanted. Apple's like, okay, we're going to let everybody do it, you know. And basically what happened is that's flushing the system with an incredible amount of competition. And so it for the little guys that were trying to make this a business and were fighting for more access to the tools, the problem they had is that Apple, did a dip way more than they expected, and now is going to make it much harder. If you're an authorized dealer or an authorized repair shop, this is not going to affect you, because there's people like me that will just go to you because I don't want to try to do it myself, and I want someone authorized to do it. So that authorized isn't going to be that affected, but all the little shops that were doing this could be profoundly affected, because people will be able to compete with them at a much higher level.
Do you think they also think people are going to look at this and go, never mind?
Well, no, I think so. Absolutely. I mean, I think that there's going to be a lot of people that just say, I'm just going to go to the.
Yeah.
But the point is that the people who say, I'm just going to go to whatever, are people that are probably going to go to an authorized repair facility.
Yeah.
And so the people who were going to go to the little shop, might want to try to save more and do it themselves. And that's why things get much more complicated now for them.
Or if you're technically really adept and you're like Alex and you care about privacy, you'll just do it yourself so nobody ever gets to touch your phone.
I just want to fix one of my older phones for fun. There's a couple of them that have some, just a fun thing to do.
And that's one of the interesting things about this part. Well, Apple has said that they're going to be expanding this primarily with Mac hardware, but I'm interested to see how far back they decide to go in the iPhone product line, because iFixit got a deal with Google that's similar to what they have with Samsung, where Google is helping them. It will now give them official parts, official guides, official stuff to be the official, like, oh, we wish we had hundreds and hundreds of Google stores around the country to do repairs for. But the thing is, they're offering parts for every phone all the way back to the Pixel 2. It would be nice if Apple were offering that for things that are not like current models, like things that are 2 or 3 years old that are out of warranty, maybe out of the regular access to Apple stores, and the people who would benefit the most from these kind of repairs.
Speaking of Apple TV, when is it this week that the prehistoric world show is?
Ooh, I don't remember.
I feel like it was May 2nd through 5th or something like that. I'll be watching.
It looks so good.
Doesn't that look good? I'm looking on it. I don't see it. So maybe I got the date wrong. Maybe it's next week. I don't even see the promo anymore. All right. Because we had talked about that as something just couldn't
looks
wait
really
to watch
good.
That. Yeah.
It's so much fun.
Chat room, do you know when is the, it's David Attenborough narrates the prehistoric world with dinosaurs and stuff as if it were planet Earth. Is this the year the Earth changed? No, that's something else. That's another David Attenborough. All right. Let's see. Rumors. There's not a lot this week. There's the Apple iPhone 14 Pro and Pro Max with hole punch notch. No notch. So I'm sorry. Hole punch lozenge.
May 23rd, Leo. Sorry. May 23rd.
May 23rd. Oh, shoot.
Yeah.
Oh, shoot.
Gotta keep waiting.
May 23rd to 27th.
For Victoria's Day. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that what it is? It's Victoria Day?
Yeah. Okay. The 24th is Victoria Day.
Okay. The iPhone 14 front panels have leaked on Weibo and show an aspect ratio. Oh, I hope this isn't true. Slightly different aspect ratio. 19 to 5 to 9 as opposed to 20 to 9. I don't know.
Well, for the pros, because you got to fit that huge honking ! Shape.
Now, it looks like there's still a lozenge on some models.
But the regular ones still have the notch.
The 14 Max and the 14 have a notch, and the Pros have the notch, the punch lozenge.
The exclamation mark.
The exclamation mark. The sideways. Oh, now, I wish you hadn't said that. I'm not going to be able to unsee that.
Or the eye. Like the eye in iPhone, Leo. It looks exactly like the eye in iPhone.
It's a little dot. All right. Anything else in these rumors? These won't be till September, but
I did a whole video on this because I found it fascinating, but there's ongoing rumors that now both Guomin-Chi and Mark Gurman and 9to5Mac independently have said that Apple's going to stick with the A15 for the regular models and go to the A16 for the Pro models. And the only thing I'm wondering is Taiwan Semiconductor was so good for so long, but they had not managed to get their 3-nanometer project online. It was supposed to be the end of this year. That's been pushed out. So they're doing a 4-nanometer process instead. And that really is just a third optimization of the 5-nanometer process, which is already on. So I'm wondering if Apple just can't get enough A16 chips. And so what they're going to do is move the A15 Plus down, because the A15 Plus is one of the extra GPU and the extra RAM, move that into the base model iPhone 14s, because that'll give it a big year-over-year boost. It'll be equivalent to what the Pros had last year. And then use all the A16 supply for the Pro models, and that'll give them that performance boost plus whatever special features they're working on. It's kind of supply chain management at that point.
You also have, looks like you're getting a headache because you say the iPhone 14 needs USB-C. I couldn't agree more.
So the thing is, like, you could make a case. Like, you could make a case that so many people are using Lightning and that it's simpler and the USB-C standards are ridiculous. Like, I went and bought Thunderbolt cables. I paid for them because the USB cables just, I don't know which one does which anymore. But when the minute they put ProRes rendering, like, so they made a chipset that could capture ProRes, media engines, all of that. They wrote a storage controller that could write 6 gigabytes per minute to the drive, but they didn't give us an I/O controller that could get it off. And I know Alex talks about, like, in his world, you're just filming and throwing them in behind you and PAs grab them and go take it off. But, like, for those of you who can't afford 3 to 4 iPhones, you need to be able to get the stuff off. And even a high-speed wireless is fun, it's convenient, but you need, like if anything goes wrong, you need to be able to plug that stuff in and pull it off at faster than USB 2 speeds. So it just seems like if you're really calling it Pro, like, the last thing I'll say is that the iPhone Pro used to be like AirPods Pro, where it really just meant premium. But now it really is Pro, like, you know, Pro Workflows Pro, and we need Pro connectors.
I would strongly prefer a USB-C on an iPhone. I mean, having it, you know, I have so many parts of my ecosystem now that are all USB-C or Thunderbolt.
Exactly.
That I would, you know, it's now the odd cable out. It's the one that I have to keep on remembering to pack because I have plenty of the other ones. All of mine take power and data. I throw the ones away that do slow data because I'm just like, I just can't take it. But outside of that, the USB-C is very flawed in the way that it's labeled. Like, that's the big problem with it, is that there's 1,000 different ones that are all the same. But I think that it would be really great to have the phone with a USB-C.
Yeah, I will add to that I replaced my really, really nice phone finally after like 5 years, like last year. I was considering switching back from Android to iPhone. And honestly, if the iPhone, the thing that kind of cut that off early was the fact that the iPhone doesn't have USB-C, and the fact that in my mind there was a lot of pluses and minuses to both in my eyes. It's not as though like that was what decided the thing, but the thing is like, but do I really want to have to make sure I have the right cable every time that I travel or anytime I go out to another set of cables? It's after spending 4 days in New York and actually taking a moment to appreciate the fact that I have a really good pro level stills camera. I have a laptop. I have an iPad. I have a phone. I have a little LED light, that a task light. All this stuff that all will charge off of the same couple little brick chargers that I have. Do I really want to complicate that by having an additional sort of cable system and an initial kind of thing like that? I acknowledge what Alex is saying, that there's also in white paint marker I have on one of them, that this is the one that will charge the iPad Pro really, really quickly versus the other ones that are just fine for like the lower power devices. That's absolutely acknowledged. You have to label like which ones are which, but the fact that you have like any one of these can charge any other one of these, including like the battery booster in my laptop bag, that is such a value add, and I cannot wait for the iPhone to have USB-C.
Someday.
They're just going to get rid of the port, and I'm going to be sad because, like, the Matrix and Battlestar Galactica, pros need ports. It's going to be salty about it.
I don't even understand how that'll work without screwing people over somehow, but I'm going to wait and see. Johnny Ives is no longer with us, so at least they'll say, no, that would be ridiculous. Sure, it'd be prettier, but that would be ridiculous. Come on.
Good news for Mac users who want to play the latest games. GeForce Now is M1 native. This is another one of those streaming services like Microsoft's Xbox Game Pass. And Amazon has a streaming service called Luna, I think. I don't know. I can't remember. GeForce Now is pretty awesome. You can even get 4K streaming, and it plays with the M1 natively. So if you're waiting to get a hot game on your M1, you can even
like
buy
Fortnite.
Yeah, like Fortnite. Yeah, I don't know. Is Fortnite on?
I think
GeForce
so.
Now. That would be hysterical. That would be hysterical. I'll have to check it out. Let's see what else. I think we are pretty good. Any stories? I mean, there's a lot of little stories. I could. Spanish Prime Minister's mobile phone infected by Pegasus. Nice.
I do. I am paying a lot of attention to. Again, we've talked about it in the past, but the work, the return to work. I've had a couple people that I know at Apple leave.
Yeah,
after 20 years.
I was just nervous about recovering labor unrest. But yeah, there is apparently, again, it's hard to know, a significant number of Apple employees who do not want to go back. They just want, I mean, they want to stay working at Apple, but they don't want to go back to the campus.
And it's a pretty hot topic. I mean, the fact that people are, you know, and the problem is I was really thinking about it because I saw someone that I know, you know, they just said, I'm leaving because of the, I want to stay where I'm at.
Yeah.
You know, like I, you know, and the problem is that the golden handcuffs eventually become golden wings because at some point you have so much, if you've been there for 20 years, you have so much stock that you're there because you're excited to be there or you're not. Well, and also you're there because you're excited to be there or you don't have to really work anymore. You've paid off your house. You've got enough to live on for the rest of your life. You know, if you're frugal, so not even that frugal. And so I think that, that's if you're in a relatively good position at Apple and you've been there for 20 years, it's a thing, you know? And so I think that, and I've just noticed a surprising number of people that I've either worked with in the past or knew that have been there for a long time that they're either, I've heard rumblings that they're thinking of leaving or they've left.
Apple's trying to respond to this with this hybrid working pilot, but there was an open letter from Apple employees saying it's not the answer at all. It's inflexible and it doesn't solve the problem. They talk about the reasons why Apple wants you to return, you know, the serendipity that comes from bumping into colleagues, the in-person
collaboration. I think there's a bigger reason, though, and I think it's a problem that Apple's been fighting for a while. It's like originally when people came into Apple, the people who've been there for a while outnumbered them and they could enculturate them. It's what we were talking about at the beginning of the show. Apple's culture is very different. They run almost like a bunch of little startups, very small teams, very focus oriented, directly responsible individuals. And new people would come in and they'd get enculturated. They would learn to like literally bleed in six colors. And they started hiring so many people that got diluted. And now over the last 2 years, you have people who've never been on part of teams. And like the stuff that's happening on Slack with Apple, that doesn't happen at Apple, like not traditional Apple. And some of it is amazing, but it's still not like the culture that Apple traditionally had. And maybe that culture should change. But I think there's a lot of people who think that if they do just let this all go, then that is the end of sort of the Steve Jobs era, the Apple culture.
Some of this is also driven by, you know, 2 years of not having to commute and suddenly getting in the car and seeing $6 a gallon gas prices and saying, I don't want to spend 20% of my workday driving to work.
Well, they could work from beaches and ski slopes for the last 2 years, literally. Yeah.
Well, also there's the simple fact that some things seem unfathomable until you are forced to fathom it. So after 2 or 3 years of not going to this office every single day and not being exposed to that culture every single day, you stop thinking yourself, your identity is less bound to being an Apple employee who works on the Apple campus. And it becomes, and you start to think of yourself more as I am an individual employee with a specific set of highly marketable skills that I could then apply to pretty much wherever I go. I mean, this is what's happening all across society here. Where as soon as you thought, well, I can't imagine not going to Apple like Apple campus ever for 5 times. I can't imagine not seeing these people like 5 times a day. So a lot of people are rethinking a lot of things they previously might have thought as bedrock parts of their lives and their careers.
The letter concludes. Or as Steve said, quote, it doesn't make sense to hire smart people and then tell them what to do. We hire smart people so they can tell us what to do, end quote. Here we are, the smart people that you hired, and we are telling you what to do. Please get out of our way. There is no one-size-fits-all solution. Let us decide how we work best, and let us do the best work of our lives. That seems nice. Not unreasonable.
I think that they're going against the grain. It'll be really interesting to see how this turns out because, I mean, in so many companies, I mean, obviously I have a lot of friends in a lot of different big companies and in so many of them, a lot of them are just like, well, I'm not going back. Like and in their companies, they're being allowed to do that because those companies are trying to hang on to everybody. I mean, and the companies that are really trying to force everyone to go back are finding, you know, that they're competing against companies that are very aggressively saying it's okay to work from home or it's okay to work from a remote pod or it's okay to not have to be in Silicon Valley. I mean, the prices that the housing prices in Silicon Valley went from absolutely crazy to completely bonkers. Like, I mean, you know, it's a shack is $1 million. I mean, I don't even know if you can buy a house.
That's right.
So the thing is you're not asking someone just to work from home. A lot of these people during COVID, you know, they had a vacation house or they had something else or they moved away from the cities to be safer or whatever. And now they're not in this. I mean, South Bay is not the nicest place in the world.
I know a guy who spent a year in Barbados working from home. I don't blame him for not wanting to come back.
Oh, did you see the guy who got a job both, I think it was Microsoft and Amazon or something like that. He tweeted about it. He works full time for both companies. He said it takes him like a little bit of time at Microsoft, more time at the other company, but he effectively can manage both jobs and he still has a rampant home life.
Of course, that's what they are worried about, right? Like that's why they want you to come into the office.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. I will let you do iJustine's video for your pick if you want, Renee. Okay, we'll save that. Let's take a break and do our picks of the week coming up next. So glad Andy Iannacco was just sleepy.
I'm embarrassed. Thank you because it seems as though a higher life form would be okay with like, hey, gee, we have to be awake by 2 p.m. to think we can manage it.
I woke up this morning tramping around with a Google show across the street at you. That's what we were concerned about this morning.
I looked at the clock, and it said like it's noon, and I went, what the hell? The clock was broken. Thank God. Because I leapt out of bed. I said, oh, my God. So I kind of know how you must feel, Andy.
Like SEAL Team 6,
Leo. It was like, oh, my God. And then I looked out the window and said, it's not noon. It's 7:30.
I said, you know, I am a grown adult, but sometimes I have to remind myself that when you get 2 or 3 hours of sleep because you had a really you went out with friends the night before and you're going to be coming out early tomorrow morning to go see museums and things, that's not sleep abandoned, that's only sleep deferred, Andy. So it's you're going to be sleeping 15 or 16 hours straight if you
I notice as I get older, I want to sleep less because I know my hours are dwindling and I don't want to waste a single one unconscious. But you've got unfortunately.
That's where I have the advantage of knowing that my best work is far, far behind me.
I was wrong. I apologize. It's Microsoft and Facebook. He's got two jobs at Microsoft and Facebook, and the Microsoft one.
That's it.
Very little time. That's the Facebook
it.
Job.
Yeah, nobody here has a commute, right? I have the longest commute of all of you guys, and it's 7 minutes door to door.
I have to about 3 or 4 times a week. I now have to drive like 20 minutes to the stage.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
But it's a huge sandbox full of cameras and lights and things. Like it's not that bad.
You don't mind. No. You don't mind. Our show today brought to you, and I mean brought to you quite literally, by CashFly. How do we know CashFly is amazing? We've been using them for more than a decade. CashFly came to our rescue when I first launched Twit because I realized I can't possibly get the audio out to everybody who wants to listen in anything less than 24 hours. So, we tried all sorts of things, BitTorrent and all kinds of things. Finally, Matt Levine at CashFly said, let me help. CashFly is a CDN, a content delivery network. And it's one of the reasons when you download a show, audio or video from us, you get it instantly with no delays, no hiccups, and you're getting it from a server near you because CashFly has over 50 locations around the globe. So it's always somewhere close to you. I really like that. Now CashFly has expanded with a new video product, CashFly's ultra-low latency video streaming. You can go live in hours, not days, with, get ready, sub-1-second latency. Ditch your unreliable WebRTC solution for their WebSocket live video workflow. It can scale to millions of simultaneous users. It's just mind-boggling. And with CashFly and their 50-plus locations around the globe, your content's going to be closer to your customers than ever before. Take a look at CashFly's storage optimization system. This is something we've been using for some time. I think they gave it to us before they gave it to the public. It's now available to everybody. You can reduce bandwidth and increase your cache hit ratio to 100% while taking a load off your Origin servers, reducing S3 bills. CashFly's SOS, storage optimization system. And, of course, don't forget, with CashFly's elite managed packages, VIP treatment, 24/7 support, response times in less than an hour. CashFly's amazing. Look at all the people who use CashFly, including us, for more than a decade. So, to recap, ultra-low latency video streaming to more than a million concurrent users, lightning-fast gaming to deliver downloads faster with zero lag, glitches, or outages. There's Twit right in there. Mobile content optimization that offers automatic and simple image optimization so your site loads faster on any device. And multi-CDN for redundancy and failover, intelligently balancing your traffic across multiple providers to give you the shortest routes, mitigating against performance glitches. It works so well, they've had 100% availability over the past 12 months. 10 times faster than the traditional methods we were using. On 6 continents, 30% faster than other major CDNs, and a 98% cache hit ratio. CashFly's the best. Best of all, 24/7, 365 priority support. They're always there when you need them. They've been there for us. They've been there for you as a Twit listener or viewer. Check it out. If you have a need for CashFly, bring your usage trends, your CDN bill if you have one, to twit.cashfly.com. They're giving away a complimentary detailed analysis. See if you're overpaying 20% or more. Twit.cashfly.com. No sales pitch, no pressure, just good information you can use. Twit.cashfly.com. Thank you, CashFly, for everything you've done for us over the years. Now, time for your picks of the week. I'm going to start with Alex Lindsay from OfficeHours.global. Alex?
And this is really an Office Hours recommendation. One of our members, Grant Whitehead, actually suggested this. And, of course, I follow most of what Grant thinks is a good idea.
Oh, I want this.
This is what's called a 12 South hover bar. And
12 South's great. It has great stuff.
It has a platform, and this platform is hefty. This is like it's got some weight to it.
Yeah.
And then it's got this arm that you can just kind of move your iPad, and it's just a solid, a very, very solid, you know, and again, Grant recommended it, and I know that he's about as picky as I am. So I was like, oh, I'll just go ahead and buy it. And it's only, I think it's like $60 or something like that. It's not a particularly expensive arm for this kind of thing. And you really feel it because, again, it's metal construction. There's a couple plastic pieces up here to hold the iPad, but the arm itself is metal. There's a lot of different ways that you can configure the iPad very easily for that kind of use. It also comes with this little clamp.
Oh, so this is the, you could do it upside down.
You can hang it from something. Oh. You can also hook it to your desk, you know, as an arm, as a separate arm. So it all comes together. There's a whole bunch of options on Amazon. Just get the basic one. They try to sell you a bunch of extra things. So anyway, but this is, you know, the $69 version or the $59 version or whatever is the one
that's
there. But yeah,
that's so cute.
And it works really well. And you feel like it's a secure connection. Like this is not going anywhere. And it's just spring loaded, so it's easy to put together. And I have to for my office hours, I'm in a hotel more often now. So I go to LA a little bit, and I'm putting this in because I need a separate screen to manage some stuff. And I was like, well, this will all fold up and I can put it in my carry-on.
Yeah.
So along with other things. And so, but it's a really, really great stand. So
it looks like it fits one size fits all. Would it fit a 12.9-inch?
Yeah. Yeah,
oh,
absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah, it just pulls open.
Down to the iPhone and all the way up to the biggest iPad?
I don't think down to the iPhone.
This
I think it would
iPhone.
Be any.
Oh no, this is iPad. You're right. You're right.
Yeah, I think it's all iPad. I think it would do it to the iPad Mini though. It says holds iPad or iPhone.
In infinite positions, heights, and angles. It says it on the. It says it right here.
I think that you would have to.
I think that way. Huh?
I think that you would have to do it like. It could do it like. So here's the.
Here, show Alex's.
So there. Yeah. So there's.
Oh well, that works. I mean,
it works. You could just turn it. So you could absolutely put. You could put your iPhone. You wouldn't hold it. You'd hold it lengthwise. Yeah.
Yeah.
It does work. The iPhone.
Yeah. Nice.
Slick.
I'm going to buy one for my mom for Mother's Day.
It's really
because we
great.
Talk on FaceTime on her iPad, and she's always like,
"You're always looking at the ceiling."
Up against stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Oh yeah. Always looking at the ceiling.
Yeah. Just at the top of her head. I have a mother-in-law and a mother.
Oh, that's great. I'm going to be. Yeah. I think I'll get one for Lisa too. Yeah. Wow, 12 South makes good stuff.
Great.
Yeah,
they do.
Wow. Okay, good pick.
And they still make the compass. Oh, it's awesome. My favorite like tabletop stand.
I have a few of their stands. I think. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so they make so many things. They're just like even if you're on the fence. Oh, I don't really need another stand. That you look at it and said, I kind of want to own that object. it's a beautifully designed thing. Yeah.
Very good pick. Thank you. Yeah, you're right. $67 on Amazon, and I can get it in time for Mother's Day. Okay, Andy Anatko, your pick of the week.
You know, I've been looking at ever since I got an iPad. I've been looking at note taking apps, and it's. I think I know why there are so many different note taking apps for the iPad because there are. Really, there's just no one size fits all for everybody. The Notes app that you get for free is fine, but it's insufficient for me because when I'm taking notes on the iPad, I'm either in a text mode, in which case I don't want to be bothered by drawing tools, or I'm in a free thinking drawing mode where I really am here to take handwritten notes and add a combination of notes and sketches as I go along and arrows, circles and arrows and paragraphs on the back of each one. And it's really hard to get that dialed in specifically for exactly what you want. The closest I've recently discovered an app called PenBook that I really like because of two things. Number one, the pen interface is not clunky. One of my problems with note taking apps on the iPad that use a lot of pen input is that it seems as though a third of the interface is just toolbars and stuff like that. I don't want that. I want to be able to focus just on this sheet of paper. The other thing though is that it has truly hundreds and hundreds of different templates, meaning that what are you drawing on top of? Are you drawing on like college ruled notebook paper? Are you drawing on grid paper? Are you drawing on layout paper for designing user interfaces? Are you designing on like music grid paper? And the thing is, you can customize these things. The buzzword they use is smart background paper, where it's not just we did something in Adobe Illustrator and you can use that as the background. For instance, when you're using it as like a calendar planner, you can adjust how big these grids are, and also it understands that today is May 3rd. I'm sorry, I've been asleep all week. I don't know what day it is. Meaning that if you open to today's calendar page, it will open it to Tuesday, May 3rd.
I know. If it were May 4th, you would have your cinnamon bun hair and your brass bra on right now. So
exactly.
Go ahead.
Or
that's how I know it's not May 4th yet.
Excuse me. It's going to be. I'm going to be working on my R5D4 robot taking it to hospital. But yeah. So essentially, when I'm doing handwritten notes, I really just want. Don't give me any organization. Don't give me any order. This is for free form note taking and thinking. And this one gives me the freedom to do. Freeform notes and change colors, change pens, change styles, while still having the ability to. I'm designing a user interface for a website. I really do want that grid format because otherwise, my notes are going to take a look like a mess. And it doesn't do cool things like here is these 18 pages of notes as a text file, but it will export as PDF as any kind of format you want, and it also will do search based on what you have written. So it does use use all the pen, the handwriting APIs that are built into iOS. It's really cool. Again, it's simple enough and complicated enough to be kind of in the butter zone. So I've been using it a lot. My usual indication is, am I still using it 8 hours later? And I've been using it now for 2 or 3 weeks. We'll see if I'm still using it in 2 or 3 months, but it's definitely good enough to recommend, I think.
I have all of the notepad apps for the iPad, but none of them do just this, which is exactly all I really need, like is graph paper, a variety of different papers. That's really cool. This is nice.
Annual subscription. I think it's something like, I'm on the wrong page. I think it's something like $10 a year, I think. Okay.
Not much.
It's not much. I'm sorry. I don't have that in front of me.
I'm loading it right now. Let's see. It's free with in-app purchases.
Okay. Right.
So you decide. Probably you have to pay for paper and different papers and stuff, stationery packs, I would guess. Yeah. Okay.
It's not endless in-app purchases. It's not as though, oh, like, gee, I'm sorry. Will you want to use the eraser? It's about half a 0.001 Ethereum per stroke.
Oh, you get all of the stationery and writing features in a single notebook for free forever. Premium lets you create and export unlimited notebooks, receive access to new stationery and covers as it's designed, and get regular app updates. Okay, cool. That's also have a lifetime purchase as well.
Right. That's another thing I forgot to mention. You can have multiple of these things. So one can just be a sketchbook for ideas. Another thing could be an actual project note.
Lifetime is $37.99. PenBook Pro, $14.99 a year. $15 a year. Nice. This is good. I've been looking for this. From User Camp. PenBook.
Yeah.
iPhone and
they also started off using writing pen apps for like other platforms too. So it's not as though
there's a Windows version, which is kind of cool. The
blog post they wrote about this is pretty good. They wrote PenBook because they just were kind of intrigued by what Apple was doing with their pen APIs, and they wanted to see like what they were to work with, and they were just having so much fun that by the time they finished, they actually wrote a really good app and they decided to start selling it.
Nice. Renee Ritchie, your pick of the week, sir.
So, friend of the show, friend of many of ours, Justine Nazarek, iJustine, had the opportunity to go to the Fitness Plus Studios in Venice Beach. I think it's Venice Beach, California, outside Los Angeles. And she got to talk to Jay Blahnik, who is vice president of fitness technologies at Apple, and tour the studio, which looks magnificent. It is basically, like Alex and I were chatting about it before the show started, it is like Nirvana Studio. Like it is just so beautifully designed, so well lit, so well photographed and captured. And she shows a little bit of what it's like in their switching room and what it's like, you know, when they shoot it. She speaks to Jessica Skye, who's one of their trainers, who does a lot of the thoughtful, more meditative, more yoga focused content. And I hope I'm going to pronounce the name, like Bakare, I think is how you pronounce it. Who looks like he's a Marvel superhero, just completely chiseled from some, you know, some metal that or stone that doesn't exist on our planet. But they were talking about how they think about it and some of the stuff that's been going on in the last 18 months and how they launched during, you know, at the end of 2020, which was both really good because it allowed people to bring this into their homes, you know, and use this in a situation where maybe you didn't have the option of, or most people didn't have the option of going to a gym, but how they're expanding it with Time to Walk and now Time to Run. And they've got so much more offered now. They have workouts for pregnant women, and they have pre-ski workouts, and they're continually expanding it and adding new content and just sort of the process they go through when they plan out a class and when they practice it and when they get input from the other trainers. And it's a really interesting look at Fitness Plus with the enthusiasm that I love so much, especially like we get so cynical about tech sometimes in the industry, because unlike, you know, regular people, we get a new phone every 2 weeks. You know, they're not special to us anymore when someone else might get a new phone every 4 years and they care deeply about it. Or we might get to try every service from every vendor, like a Peloton one day, a Fitness Plus the next. But a lot of people don't. So I really appreciate how excited she gets about this, because I think it's sort of like more what a normal person would react to when they suddenly have all of this available in their gym or in their home.
Very nice.
It's well worth checking out.
It's on iJustine's channel. She is, by the way, we're glad to say, in good shape after her incident. She was hospitalized for, was it a blood clot?
Blood clot, yeah.
Her dad took really good care of her. They didn't have to take her ribs out, so that's good. She's on blood thinners right now. But otherwise, obviously, she looks in the peak of health. Although,
and she is lightsaber lethal.
I didn't realize how tall. Either Jay Blahnik is really tall, or Justine is shorter than I thought.
So I don't know if you ever saw The Winter Soldier, but like, there's this scene where Steve Rogers just keeps doing laps around the Falcon. He keeps saying, "On your left, on your left."
Yeah.
I believe Jay does that for California every day. Like, he just goes from San Francisco down to Santa Monica. On your left,
And Alex, you were talking before the show began about some of the equipment there. In particular, this robotic pedestal camera.
Yeah, that's a, I think, I'm not 100% certain, but I think that that is a telemetrics pedestal. So it's a, that little platform actually moves around. So you can program not only.
That's why it has a green and red light on it. So you, it's like a port and starboard light on a boat. So you, you know how to avoid getting run over by it.
Yeah, and so, but you can program it to run to go somewhere else. Now, I've not seen that arm put on those.
That's
things
really
before.
Cool. So it's like a little mini jib. Yeah. That's really, they must have some great motion shots there.
Yeah. Droid.
So it's it's pretty slick.
That is a nice tool. Yeah.
I mean, there's definitely a. I'm pretty sure. I wasn't sure. I looked through some images. I'm pretty sure that's a Grass Valley switcher. So there's definitely a spared no expense moment of that. I mean, that studio is. They spent all the money on it. Like it's not. No,
why wouldn't
around.
They?
I know exactly. Well, that's the best part of when Apple does content. You're just like, oh, it's going to be fun just to look at.
Design is so nice too of the studio.
It's actually a really clean studio. We had Grass Valley.
It's immaculate.
Tech TV, but this looks much nicer than the old school.
I'm not 100% certain. I'm still trying to find the same button configuration. Yeah. But it looks like
that was probably custom built by Grass Valley for Apple.
Wait, Alex has got office hours on it. They're going to have a 30-minute talk and they'll figure it out.
Yeah, exactly.
Very nice.
How long between like when Apple just happens to mention, you know, that you've got this knob over here. It would be nice if it were like 4 inches higher. How long do they have to wait before they send them a brand new one of those with a knob 4 inches higher?
Depends if it's eating a power bar or not.
Posted 6 hours ago, already 26,000 views. Part of iJustine's Tech Tuesday playlist, Apple Fitness Plus Studio Tour, youtube.com/iJustine. Thank you, gentlemen. Andy, we're going to dock you for an hour's pay. I hope you don't mind. No.
Sorry.
He's buying drinks after the show.
There you go.
Yeah,
I like
exactly.
That.
That would be the, I would be like, again, everybody, here, enjoy this $8 gift card to Starbucks. I apologize. It was.
When are you going to be on WGBH in Boston next?
Friday, 12:30 in the afternoon. Go to WGBHnews.org live or later to stream it. I will not be in the studio in the library, but I will be on.
Nice. You never sleep through that, do you?
No, because see, that's the problem. Like if I know that I have to be out of the house by 8 a.m. to like make a train, that's like, no, there's no way I'm oversleeping for that. If it's like, no, you know what? So long as you're awake 20 minutes before you go on, you've already done your work. Like that's when, oh,
that's why we have a studio. Cause if it were in my house, I'd miss it all.
Yeah,
the time.
Exactly.
Yeah. I completely
plus
understand.
Dance.
Thank you, Alex. Renee Ritchie, youtube.com/Renee Ritchie. Latest video, reaction video on USB-C. There's also that video we talked about earlier about, I forgot what, something good.
Apple Silicon for the upcoming
Apple
iPhones.
Silicon for the Apple. Yeah, why they're not using an A15.
Shortages, yeah.
Yeah. Always a great place to get thoughtful.
I'm Apple trying to reviews. Do videos that nobody else can do because I found like a lot of the videos are the same these days, and I don't want to be like the third video on any specific topic.
Good for
so
you.
I'm trying to do stuff that, that more caters to what I do for, with my time.
That's exactly
point
what you should
do. Is everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Alex Lindsay, he does it all day long at officehours.global. He's, of course, employed by 090.media, so if you want to hire him, that's where you should go. And if you are interested in learning about production, I don't know, a million things, go to officehours.global.
It's funny because the range is so wide. You know, we started talking. We're starting to cover events, so we covered NAB to some degree. We went down to the Cyber Rodeo, or some of our members went down to the Cyber Rodeo, and we're going to start ramping that up. So Monday we're talking about how we did that, and then today we were talking about synths with Carl Asmussen and Nick Batt, who's got a big YouTube channel on synths. And tomorrow we're talking about modeling in 3D, and then on we have one of the product managers from Zoom from Webinar coming on to talk about new features on Thursday. And then we have someone who works in the actually at NewTek on the booths, Lenny Nelson.
Oh, neat.
He's part of the booth, the event team. And so he's going to come and talk about what that actually takes. And then we're going to have a little concert on Saturday.
So in a couple of years, they have 770 shows. We're only at 816. I mean, you guys are catching up
coming
very
up fast.
Rapidly. Yeah.
We're going to pass
a day, Leo.
Yeah.
So we're coming up fast.
You can join the Zoom. You get an invitation at officehours.global or watch the videos on YouTube or on the website officehours.global. Thank you, all three. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC. If you want to watch us do it live, live.twit.tv. People who watch live or listen live often like to chat live at irc.twit.tv, our community-run chat room. That's open to all. Club Twit members get their own special chat room, the Club Twit Discord, which is always a great time, full of animated GIFs and animated fun. If you're interested in Club Twit, $7 a month gets you ad-free versions of all the shows, access to the Discord, where it's not just show chat, but talk about all sorts of great stuff all the time. And you get the Twit Plus feed, which features material we don't put out on the regular feeds, like our Untitled Linux show, the Giz Fizz, Stacy's Book Club, and a whole lot more. We've got some events coming up. Let me just look at the event list. Scott Wilkinson on Thursday in Club Twit for an Ask Me Anything. The following Thursday, Father Robert Ballasaire. So a couple of fireside chats coming up in Club Twit. Again, $7 a month. You get a lot of benefit, and it sure helps us. So we thank you in advance. Twit.tv/Club Twit. I appreciate it. Thanks for joining us. Now, get back to work because break time is over. Bye-bye.
Hey, I'm Rod Pyle, editor of Ad Astra magazine, and each week I'm joined by Tarek Malik, the editor-in-chief over at space.com, in our new This Week in Space podcast. Every Friday, Tarek and I take a deep dive into the stories that define the new space age. What's NASA up to? When will Americans once again set foot on the moon? And how about those samples from the Perseverance rover? When are those coming home? What the heck has Elon Musk done now? In addition to all the latest and greatest in space exploration, we'll take an occasional look at bits of spaceflight history that you probably never heard of, and all with an eye towards having a good time along the way. Check us out on your favorite podcatcher.